Blog Talk Radio.
All righty there, and good evening all, and welcome in to an unusual, we do this a couple of times a year, a little bit unusual Friday night edition of the Race 3 Motorsports Hour. The garage is open, albeit, as you heard there, the guys are running just a little bit slow. Thanks to the Blog Talk Radio garage here. I don't know what to make of it any longer. Anyhow, we are here and we are sitting here on the evening just before we go to. But look, there's only four races remaining before we get to the chase, and tomorrow night we're going to be entertained with Bristol Motor Speedway of all places, and second time there this year. Qualifying, I believe, has perhaps just concluded or is just about to, and I'm going to have the results for that here momentarily. One that I would think that Mechanic Sidekick is not going to appreciate much, as it is loaded up on the front end with a whole bunch of JGR drivers. But nonetheless, we're going to talk a lot about tonight.
Can we just get in the
running
car?
Yeah, I hear you. We're going to talk a lot here this evening about Bristol, and I got to be honest, it's not one of my favorite tracks, but they've made some improvements, and we're going to talk about those, and I'm not sure whether those improvements are good, bad, or what, but we'll talk about them. I think Sidekick will like them, but I'm not sure I do. Anyhow, it's been a couple of weeks since we've been on the air here with Race Trim, with the exception of Tuesday night when we brought you a special, but the last time we were on, we were talking about Watkins Glen. So we're going to turn the clock back for a little bit. We'll take a look at what happened 2 weeks ago at Watkins Glen, the second road course. That'll be it now for road courses for 2016 here in NASCAR. No more until they get that stupid thing fixed and put a road course in the chase. We'll go back and take a look at that one as, who won that? That was a JGR driver, I think. Denny Hamlin got his second win of the season. And listen, if there was nothing to enjoy about the race, because for gosh sakes, it was just filled with nothing but cautions at the end of it, which really kind of got under my nerves a little bit. But if there was nothing to like, well, you had to love that burnout. Well, maybe not. NASCAR's actually got burnouts in their crosshairs, and I can't wait to get Sidekick's thoughts on that one as well. We'll be talking about that
it's
one in some comments
outrage.
That came from, I hear you, that came from our good buddy Steve O'Donnell. We'll get into all of that, as I pointed out, improvements apparently made at Bristol. Jimmy Johnson's all in favor of them. And as I pointed out, we just got four races remaining. So we're going to take a look at the standings as well with just four races. Interestingly enough, just four drivers right now, winless drivers, four winless drivers that are in, I guess you could say they're kind of on the bubble, albeit you still have those handful that are on the bubble on the outside looking in. Well, it's This is when it really starts to get interesting, folks. When you get down to this point right now in the NASCAR season, and now everybody's going to be scoreboard watching for the next couple of races. But there you go. We're going to the last great Coliseum, and make no mistake about it, this thing has been dominated. As I pointed out back in April, this thing has been dominated over the years by the Busch brothers. Kurt and Kyle Busch have more wins here than anybody else. And totaled together, you're looking at about 10 of them. We'll also take a look at our fantasy, our own personal fantasy standings here. And we'll take a look at our Eat My Dust picks and where that all stands. And, well, of course, we'll also be taking bets this evening on the over-under for the number of cautions tomorrow night, particularly with all of the improvements. Bristol is, in fact, known for being the track where you will see the most cautions. If anybody wants to jump in with us here for the next hour or so, please don't hesitate. 347-826-9964 is how you can get a hold of us here. 347-826-9964 is how you can reach us on the phone if you are listening via a computer or something to that effect, mobile device, etc. You want to leave us a message in our Blog Talk Radio chat room. While many other things here at BTR are not working, it does appear that the chat room is. You can leave us a message there. Otherwise, you can hit me up on Twitter at Frat House Mike is how you can always reach me at Twitter at Frat House Mike. We're down a mechanic this evening, but that's okay because we're in the off hours. We're down one mechanic, but we do have, well, we have, oh, Boo Toyotas. Yes, we have Boo Toyotas. we got Sidekick jumping in with us here this evening. We're going to try to get through this for the next hour or so.
We're going to try. We're down a crew chief due to suspension. Something about a lug nut.
Yeah, we won't get into what the suspension was for. No, just joking on that one. We'll get through this. We'll get through this one. Just the two of us here. Let me take a look at this here real quick. I'm not sure. I cannot tell. Let me just refresh this here real quick. Let's see if these are final. Because we were into round three. I guess they were final. Oh-ho! And now it's not giving me anything at all. Last I saw on qualifying...
Carl Edwards is on the pole. That's what you want to know.
That's what it looked like. Yeah, that's what it looked like. And in fact, I got to be honest with you,
Denny Hamlin is second.
A whole load of JGRs of Martin Truex up there. I think Kyle Busch was in the top 10. I think Denny Hamlin was in... Denny Hamlin, I think, is in the top... Matt Kenseth is in the top 10. We have just talked about JGR all season long, and I got to be honest with you, I'm now starting to almost get embarrassed about it because it has just been so ridiculously dominating. And, you know, it's been at a time, too, Psychic, where I thought that, you know, look, Penske ran, I thought, pretty well at both Logano, and Brad Keselowski ran pretty well 2 weeks ago at Watkins Glen. And, you know, you start to think that this thing's going to start to – it's going to swing. It's going to swing. We've been saying it all season long. This thing's going to swing. It's just not swinging, is it?
Yeah, no. I'm just sitting here reading some of the comments, you know, under the qualifying. And I kind of agree with them. Oh, yay, another race not to tune into because JGR is 1, 2, 3, 4. And I,
wow.
I got to say, I kind of feel that way.
Yeah, I understand.
I mean, sure, you know, I've had my, you know, my Toyota hate and everything. But, you know, this smacks of 6-time Jimmy Johnson. You know what I mean? Where, you know, Everybody was complaining. You know, Jimmy Johnson again. You know, it's the same thing. You know, it's just that, you know, now you've, you know, it's Joe Gibbs. You know, it's Denny Hamlin. It's Carl Edwards. It's Kyle Busch. It's Matt Kenseth. It's, you know, it's Martin Truex by proxy. You know.
Yeah, I you know, it, like it, I said, you know, it's well-known fact, and I don't hide it, and everybody knows it here, and anybody who listens regularly. You know, look, I'm a big, big JGR fan, and have been for all the years that I have been following NASCAR. But I got to be honest with you. I mean, even I'm starting to get somewhat, I mean, you start to squirm a little bit. I start to, you know, here I am, I'm, you know, I'm with you guys, and I'm hosting a weekly, you know, motorsports talk program, and I'm starting to feel bad. Carl Edwards on the pole for tomorrow. Denny Hamlin number two. Kyle Busch number three. Okay, drop it down. You got Ryan Blaney. Hey, great, that's awesome. Ryan Blaney number four. And you know Ryan Blaney led in all three phases of, well, I was in the top five in all three phases of qualifying today, all three of them. So good for Ryan Blaney. Matt Kenseth, there you go. Matt Kenseth, number five. Martin Truex, number seven. You know, where did Denny ultimately fall down to? I'm just looking. I'm trying to find his. Denny Hamlin? Oh, Denny Hamlin, number two. Who am I missing? Who am I missing on the – no, I got them all, don't I?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's – wow. Wow. How about Chris Buescher coming in at number 12? You know, coming off of that Pocono win a couple of weeks ago, and there's Chris Buescher coming out of the number 12 spot. And here's what we know about Bristol, and we'll talk about Bristol at a little bit greater length, obviously, as we get a little deeper into the show. But here's what we know about Bristol. 59% of the time, winners from at this racetrack, 59% of the time come out of the top five, 91% of the time out of the top 15. So, you know, who's coming in at number 15 right now on the poll or, you know, in the lineup? Ryan Newman. And, you know, one of our bubble
Newman.
Drivers. Yeah. Hello, Newman. But one of our bubble drivers, in fact, the number one, technically, I mean, he's in. So technically, he's not a bubble driver. He's in at number 13. But he's in on points. He doesn't have a win. So, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about our four. We'll talk a little bit more about our four winless drivers here momentarily.
Well, hey, Liz should be happy. You know, Almendinger's.
Almendinger's in there, yeah. Yep. Well, and, you know, isn't this what we've seen from Almendinger, though, in the past, Psychic? You know, Almendinger seems to be kind of a late-season sort of guy. Wasn't it that way last year as well, if I recall? Almendinger comes on a little bit late in the season, starts looking like he's really, really, you know, a potential to jump in there and get in there. But it all kind of seems to kind of fall down a bit. So, you know, he just doesn't seem to have that, I don't know, that staying power, you know, if for want of a better phrase, because that's so cliche. But Austin Dillon coming out at 13. He's also in there on points as well. Chase Elliott in there on points coming out of the sixth spot. So, you know, in many respects, the starting lineup for Bristol tomorrow night, in many respects, does kind of reflect a lot of what the leaderboard currently looks like. But let's go back real quick to 2 weeks ago with Watkins Glen. What were your thoughts on Watkins Glen, you know, just generally coming out of it?
Oops, sorry. I was on the mute and I was fumbling trying to hit the mute button back.
Well, obviously a Toyota won. So I'm not that happy about that. yeah, there was a lot of cautions.
Particularly at the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Penske got 2 and 3. Oh, I love it. I love Watkins.
I really don't ever have anything, bad to say about, other than potentially who the winner of the race is. And damn it, one of these times we got to get up there.
I hear you. Well, I mean, but again, as I pointed out,
it's so close to us.
As I started the program out here this evening, Penske ran well there. Logano led 8 laps, came in 2nd place. Brad Keselowski came in 3rd place, led 28 laps. In fact, Keselowski led more laps than anybody else in the field. Martin Truex, I'll tell you, and let me get to it. I'll do it right now. Let's do that right now. Martin Truex, I got the final minute or so of the race from 2 weeks ago, from Sunday 2 weeks ago at Watkins Glen. Martin Truex, I got to tell you, really put the heat on Denny Hamlin. In the final couple of turns, and darn near got him. And then spun, and Truex ended up taking 7th. But this was how it sounded in the final lap at Watkins Glen 2 weeks ago.
1 lap to go, sponsored by Credit One Bank. In the 1, Denny Hamlin with the advantage. Martin Truex Jr. running 2nd, Keselowski 3rd. These 3 have separated themselves. Hamlin trying for a mistake-free lap. Up through the S's. And now to the fastest part of the racetrack. Down the backstraight. 180 miles an hour. Breaking down to 90. Truex Jr. all over the back bumper of Denny Hamlin now. Into the carousel they go for the final time. Down the chute they go into 6. The car length in front of Furniture Rose, Martin Truex Jr. Coming up on the final turn, Martin Truex Jr. is going to be aggressive. Denny Hamlin out front, aggressive, goes around. That's right, Martin Truex Jr. spins. Denny Hamlin will win at the Glen.
All right, there you go. That's how it sounded on 2 weeks ago on Sunday, right at the conclusion of it. As I pointed out, there were, I think, like 3 cautions in the final, 12 laps or thereabouts. And, it was getting on my nerves. But that final lap was pretty intense, as Martin Truex really did try to sneak up on him and get past him in one of those turns. But as you heard there, with a little help, I think, with a little help from Joey Logano, might have been a little bit of help, got spun around and ended up 7th. Logano, though, as I point out, ends up 7th or 2nd, and Keselowski ends up 3rd. Allmendinger comes in 4th. Stewart comes in 5th. Kyle Busch 6th. Martin Truex 7th. Jamie McMurray 8th. Trevor Bayne 9th. And Matt Kenseth comes in 10th. Watkins Glen, the way I phrased it, Sidekick, was Watkins Glen. I mean, at least it was a weather-free race. We didn't have any bad weather. We've had bad weather at Watkins Glen in the past. We've had weather there that has actually postponed the race to Monday. From that perspective, it was a good thing. Perhaps maybe not the outcome that everybody wants to see with regard to the Toyota domination, which, again, like I said, I'm actually starting to feel somewhat embarrassed by. I really thought there for a second, though, that Martin Truex was going to sneak up on him. I don't know if you had any thoughts on it or not, but what followed then, and I wanted to touch on this one, what followed then was a touch on the whole burnout thing, because for anybody that was watching it, and there actually is video of it, and I thought perhaps maybe I might be able to bring it to the air here, but it didn't translate real well just as a as an audio. You really have to see it. The burnout that Denny Hamlin proceeded on was positively epic. It went on forever. So much so to the point the car could not even be driven to the winner's circle. Steve O'Donnell of NASCAR had some comments about it. Quote, "It's something that's been out there that we're trying to avoid, yet balance the celebration. I think we will see something in the very near future. And this isn't putting it all on the 11 car. This is something we've talked about. It's a trend we don't like to see." Okay. Psychic, I want to get your thoughts on this one. There have been arguments made for why drivers probably shouldn't do it, particularly in light of the fact that you have post-race inspection. And if I'm not mistaken, aren't all the winning cars sent to NASCAR Racing Development?
Yes.
So, you know, I can see where there might be some thought that perhaps maybe these guys are trying to hide something, drivers trying to hide something, you know, crew chiefs, and perhaps saying to them, "Hey, burn that bitch out, pardon my French." But at the same time, you know, with the way NASCAR has come down on certain things in recent past, it's just another example of NASCAR wanting to piss on people's parades.
Well, I'd see. I think I mentioned this earlier on in the season that I was wondering when this conversation was going to come. Because, you know, when we were talking about post-race inspections and lug nuts and all that stuff, I said, yeah, at some point, NASCAR is going to say you're not going to be able to do burnouts due to post-race inspection. I mean, while I love a good burnout, who doesn't? I always kind of wondered what a car owner thought about his driver going out there and just tearing the car up. You know, I understand that, you know, probably a lot of stuff, transmissions, you know, things like that, you know, do get, you know,
damaged.
Rebuilt. Mm-hmm. Well, damaged, but they get rebuilt for every race. They're, you know, kind of like we, you know, you see in NHRA where they, you know, basically after every one
break
run, they break the engine down. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Tear it down.
So I, you know, I don't think that you go from race to race with a lot of, you know, the components you just ran, you know, some of it, but, you know, a lot of it gets torn down and, you know, redone, and they've got different cars for different tracks and, you know, things like that. But I always wondered, as a car owner, how do you feel watching your guy tear up this expensive piece of equipment?
Sure,
he won, but, you know, come on. You know, do you have to go burn the tires off of it to the point where, you know, now you're tearing up body panels and every other thing? So, you know, I do kind of get a little bit mixed about it because, you know, like I said, I'd love burnouts, but at the same time, you know, why are you tearing your car up? And then you throw in this part about the,
you know, the post-race inspections. And, you know, I kind of think that NASCAR does need to crack down on it, you know, because you're, you know, they are potentially damaging their car, which could force it, you know, which would A, cover up or cause your car not to pass post-race inspection. And, you know, so, you know, do you fine them because the car didn't pass because they tore it up during a celebration? Or do you give him a pass and say, well, he tore up his car celebrating, so, you know, it doesn't pass, but we can't prove that it wasn't going to pass prior to the celebration?
You know, I couldn't agree with you more from the standpoint of, and see, having been a, well, I say been, like as if it's a past, like it's past tense or something, but I consider myself a businessman, and having been a former business owner, I agree with you from the standpoint of, if that were my property, that we're, you know, pleading with sponsors. I mean, pleading. I mean, we talked to Bryce Napier the other night, and we talked about the whole sponsorship issue in NASCAR and how difficult it is. And you know, he's cold calling on companies. I mean, just cold calling, you know, driving by. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll stop at this place. You know, when you're pleading with people and they're coming up with $5,000 packages, you're pleading with sponsors to help you put a piece of equipment on the track. And then you got a guy that goes out and, for all intent and purpose, inside of what, about a minute and a half, you know, blows it. Just, I mean, and you know, look, I can't say I've ever seen anybody wreck a body, but you're blowing tires off of it. You know, Brandon has said those tires can cost as much as $1,500 a piece. You're blowing tires off of it. You know, I think we've seen a couple engines blow in burnouts. Mm-hmm. You're talking transmissions, as you just pointed out. You know, as a business owner, you know, but at the same time, should NASCAR be the one walking in and sanctioning that? Or isn't that the responsibility of the team owner to be stepping in and saying, hey, guys, can we be a little more responsible? You understand what I'm saying? I mean, that's what doesn't...
I think NASCAR has the right to step in.
But it seems to me that NASCAR is stepping in not because they're looking out for the financials. They're not looking out for the financials. They're looking out for the – they're looking at it from the standpoint, as I pointed out early on, you know, who's trying to get bias. That's what I think that they're – I think that's what their motivation is. What are these guys trying to hide?
Oh, sure. I agree with you. That's what their motivation is. And I don't have an issue with that motivation. You know, you know that the rule says your car has to pass post-race inspection. And if you go tear your car up celebrating, well, you know, maybe you should be fined for failing inspection.
Interesting.
You know, it's kind of like when the NFL came in and cut down on the excessive, you know, celebrations, you know, touchdown celebrations, you know, back in the day with the greatest show on turf, you know, you had the bob and weave, you know, and they said, hey, all right, you know, no team celebration, you know, you can do it by yourself and it can't be excessive, you know, and then they started cracking down on T.O.,
yeah,
you know, because he would whip out the pen and, you know, so I understand, you know.
Yeah, and they claimed that made your competition look bad, and you know, isn't that tantamount to giving everybody a trophy concept? Isn't that what that was all about? I mean, really?
No,
I mean, come
but,
on.
But it did. Some of the celebrations did kind of, you know,
Really? Are you seriously? I can't believe you're saying that.
Some of the celebrations were borderline taunting.
I don't believe you're saying that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, some of them were, you know, like, you know, I was upset because I loved when the Rams did the bob and weave. I didn't think that was a taunting gesture. You know, they were just, you know, they just circled around and kind of danced. You know what I mean? You know, but some of the, you know, some of the stuff that like T.O. did and some of these other things, that was a, you know, it was a little bit of taunting in there. And unfortunately, sometimes you know, in trying to create a rule, you know, the innocent, you know, quote unquote innocent participants get hurt, you know, because of the, you know, the few bad apples, you know. Obviously this is a little different, because it's, you know, it's not a team celebration or anything like that, but you do have a post-race inspection that you got to pass or you're going to get fined. Mm-hmm. So I'm totally on board with them coming in and saying, hey, you know, you want to take your victory lap, or you want to flip off your car or something. You know, by all means. But, you know, to sit there and burn your tires off till they're, you know, you got nothing but hubs left, you know, body, you know, the body, you know, rear body panels are gone. You've blown an engine, blown a rear, you know, whatever you've done, you know, that I don't think we need that in NASCAR. I'm sorry.
And, you know, I don't know exactly to what extent. Go ahead.
I was going to say, especially if you're crying about money.
Well, agreed. See, and that's where I come down on it.
And
that's, see,
that's
where I say it's the owner's responsibility to be stepping in and saying something. That's where the owners need to be stepping in. You know, now, you know, interestingly enough, I mean, you know, somebody like Chris Buescher, we don't know what he would have done because that race ended in a rain delay. So that race was called. We don't know what somebody like Chris Buescher would have done. It would have been interesting, though, to see whether there would have been a vast difference in the quote-unquote immediate post-race celebration of a Chris Buescher at Pocono versus what we saw 2 weeks ago with Denny Hamlin. You know, that would have been an interesting, you know, comparison. I wish we almost had it.
I would venture to say a smaller team, they might do a little burnout or something like that, but I would imagine, knowing that they're a small team with limited funding, probably limited cars, they would have a more subdued celebration. We had Bryce on Wednesday night. When Bryce wins his first race, and that, you know, I'm sure he might have a little celebration, but he's not going to be out there tearing that truck up.
I would agree.
You know, you know, knowing that he's got it, you know, if he tears that truck up on a celebration, you know, well, that means, you know, that's just that much more cold calling that he's got to do the following week to get the money to fix his truck.
Exactly.
You know, whereas he's, you know, the big money teams, the Hendricks and the Joe Gibbs, they probably don't care.
Well, see, and that's why
I don't necessarily think that the team owners are really going to step in. I think they've already stepped in. You know what I mean? Where your smaller teams, their team owners have probably said, hey, if you win, you know, do a little burnout, you know, burn a little rubber off. Let's try not to tear the car up too much.
Yeah.
You know, where versus Hendrick and Gibbs, you know, them guys are probably, you know, I can't see, so, you know.
So do you think that Gibbs, and I mean, look, I don't know the man personally. You know, obviously you and I have been, you know, we've been familiar with him going back far further than his NASCAR days. We remember him, for gosh sakes, when he was, and watched him almost on a weekly basis when he was, you know, an NFL coach for the Washington Redskins. Do you think that Gibbs doesn't say anything to somebody like Denny Hamlin?
He might. You know, after, you know, last week, he may have gone and said, well, you know, hey, do you,
you went a little overboard?
Need, you know, yeah. You know, yeah, he'd probably do his, you know, Ward Cleaver.
Yeah, over the top of the glasses. Yeah, over
well,
the top of the glasses.
Well, I was Ward Cleaver. Weren't you kind of hard on the beaver?
Gibbs strikes me as being a no-nonsense sort of dude.
Exactly, no. And that's what I was just going to say. Joe's not a, you know, not a go out, you know, a Jerry Jones type where, you know, go out and show off and all that other stuff. But at the same time, he's also given his guys, you know, the, you know, the room to be themselves.
Mm-hmm. True. All right. I got you there. You're right.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, he's not a micromanager type car owner, but, you know, but at the same time, he's not a, you know, all for the, you know, show kind of guy either, you know, all for the flash and the panaz and, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, but I'm sure he's, you know, probably once or twice sat down with them and said, you know, like the Kyle meeting, you know, hey Kyle, yeah, about that, about your extra race activities.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
You know, we,
particularly
we,
after.
We need you to back off a little bit of that bushwhacking, you know.
Yeah. And we've talked about, we talked a lot about that, about the, you know, the fact that, you know, Tony Stewart as an owner, he doesn't have to answer to anybody, so he can do whatever the hell he wants.
Right. You know, and that may have been, yeah, one of the reasons why he kind of left Gibbs.
It might be. You're absolutely. That's a great point. Interestingly, loyal listener Liz in the chat room says, I agree. I think it should be the owners, not NASCAR, that should be, you know, leveling the hammer here if we're going to have a hammer leveled at all on this kind of thing. You know, I guess in some respects, I think what kind of disappointed me in reading the comments from Steve O'Donnell was the fact that Steve O'Donnell made any comments at all about it. I guess that's what disappointed me, because I just kind of feel this is an area NASCAR should not get involved in. Now, having said that, I agree with you, Psychic, that I think you got to come somewhere in the middle. You can't blow the car up at the end of the race. And I think what Hamlin did was close to that. Following Watkins Glen. Now, mind you, all right, listen, you know, he was excited. It was his first road race he ever won. It was only his second win of the season. All right. I mean, he's now a firm lock for the chase. I mean, all of that. Okay, all that came into play. Great. But I think he went a little over the line, and I just kind of feel that the impetus has to be coming from the owner, not from NASCAR. I don't want to see NASCAR sanctioning anything more. It's getting on my nerves the way NASCAR is walking in and sanctioning. It feels like everything. It almost feels to me like NASCAR is becoming like the stinking NFL in that respect.
Okay, well,
from the sample.
Well, then,
if you don't want NASCAR to step in with the burnouts, how do you feel about them saying, hey, you failed post-race inspection, and we're going to fine you now?
Well, I mean,
you know, okay, you know, we'll let you do your burnouts, we'll let you do all that stuff.
Well,
but if you're,
okay,
you know,
but
if,
are you,
you
saying as
if
a result,
if you mess up your car too bad and it fails inspection?
Well, okay, are you, but that's assuming that they failed post-race inspection as a result of the burnout. How are you going to prove that one?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Instead of, you know, I think the policy kind of has been.
I think if you can't prove,
you know, prior to this, if you can't prove that the burnout or that the infraction was not caused by the burnout, like we've seen the, you know, front tires loose, you know, loose lug nut kind of, you know, where, okay,
something
you
obvious.
Know, the front tire lug nut issue is not from a burnout, right?
Right. Something obvious. Right.
Okay. So, you know, yeah, you're getting fined for that. If there's a loose lug nut on the rear wheel and you just spun the wheels off, well, you know, you can make the argument that maybe the lug, you know, maybe it was due to the burnout. You know, you doing the burnout caused you to fail the inspection.
Well, see, I'm going to be honest with you. I think there's an easy.
So we'll give you a pass because of the burnout. But now,
I think there's an easy
answer
to that. Personally, I think there's an easy answer to that. If I'm going to be irresponsible enough as a driver to burn my car out at the end of a win, to the extent that there's a possibility that I may not pass a post-race inspection, well, then, gosh darn it, that's on me. I don't have a leg to stand on.
And that's what I'm suggesting. In lieu of NASCAR cracking down on post-race celebrations, they come back and they say, look, okay, you have your celebration. Don't wreck your car to the point that it doesn't pass inspection, because instead of us, you know, letting you slide because you tore your car up, we're now going to penalize you because you tore your car up.
Well, and I'm going to be honest with you, then I don't think the driver has any I don't even think, in my opinion, that's appealable. There it is. It's done.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Instead of sanctioning the celebration, you know, just be stricter on the inspection.
I think that owners have to make it clear to their drivers, their employees, if you do this, you're running the risk that you may damage the vehicle to the extent it may not pass post-race inspection. I think that's the owner's responsibility to make that apparent and clear to the drivers. That's my opinion. And I think that one's simple. That's a simple thing to do. That's business. That's just smart business. And we've talked about that. You and I have just talked about that here for a couple of moments, at length. It's not just smart business from the standpoint of racing and the racing rules. It's smart business also from the standpoint of finance, period. I don't think that NASCAR needs the sanction. Go ahead.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. You know, that may actually, in fact, be the answer, because think about that. You know, we're talking about tearing up your car. We're talking about the finances and the penalty for failing inspection. But dig deeper into what the penalties are for failing inspection. Suspension of crew chiefs, docking points,
right?
Monetary fines.
By
doing that, you may actually be policing the post-race celebration, because are you going to want to get your crew chief suspended? Are you going to want to get docked owner driver's points? Are you going to want to, you know, the fines, you know, I get is really negligible. If you ask me, you know, a lot of these guys got money.
Well,
you know,
it's not
negligible
to the small ones.
Well, right. But, you know, the bigger teams, who was it? They were all going to chip in to pay Tony's fine.
Was it Tony or Brad Keselowski, or was it Brad Keselowski? I thought that there was one time there was Brad Keselowski.
I thought it was Tony.
Office.
They were
right,
going to pay
it. Yeah. It was one of them. Yeah, you're right. I remember.
But you know, that I think would probably may actually be a stiffer penalty than sanctioning the celebration itself.
I would agree. And let me ask you this real quick before we get off this topic, and we can get off this topic because we've beat it to death now. you know, it was 2 weeks ago that Steve O'Donnell said, quote, "I think we will see something in the very near future." Okay. There was his phrase inside of his comments. "I think we will see something in the very near future." Now, you and I and all of us here on this program have talked at length over many, many years here how quickly NASCAR makes rules changes and which way is the wind blowing? Oh, let's change that. Okay, all right. So,
yep.
In light of the fact there has been no additional address of this issue in now what is almost 2 weeks, would that indicate to you that perhaps maybe we're just going to leave this one alone?
Yeah, I don't. Oh, there. I am off mute. I don't. I think his comments kind of say it. Yeah. I think we're going to see something.
Oh, you think they're going to come down on something? All right. Okay. All right.
You know, that may have been the proverbial. You know, shot across the bow.
The bow. There you go. Okay. All right.
You know what I mean?
Well,
didn't they do something with that? Something very similar with the lug nuts?
Well, it did take them. We were bringing it up, what, 2 weeks before they actually made a move. So we were.
Yeah, but did they say something like, "Hey, we're looking into this lug nut thing. You guys might want to start, you know,
getting ready.
Yeah. You guys might want to start putting those lug nuts on." And, you know, kind of like, and then it was, you know, so they wait 2 weeks. Okay, I see teams still not putting them lug nuts on. All right, rule change. You know.
Oh,
it's almost like they, you know.
Well,
they kind of give them a warning, and if you don't heed, you know, if you don't listen to Dad, you know, Dad's going to make a rule.
Well, I'll tell you, if a ruling does come down on it, at least it'll give me another opportunity to come on here and, you know, air my grievances and do a little ranting. So, God bless them, I guess, if they do.
But also at the same time, maybe, you know, we have seen where it could be argued that they listen to the show because they've made changes that we have suggested. You know, I mean, let's be honest. We know damn well they're not listening to you and, you know, the two of us sitting here making suggestions going, you know, those guys are on to something. But it's just so funny that, you know, we'll say something and then like a week or two later, all of a sudden it's a new rule in NASCAR or something, you know?
Well, I don't know. I got some friends in different places. I got some friends in different places.
Yeah.
And I don't mean the conspiracy theory sorts.
Right. Denny Hamlin did it because he was trying to hide the fact that his car had an illegal modification.
I think he had nit.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah. But wouldn't it be funny, though, if they came back and they said, you know, hey, you know, we're going to actually just start imposing the post-race inspection.
Well, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I don't know. I will be honest. I was a little bit surprised at your initial reaction because I kind of thought that you would be a little bit old school and say, "Hey, you know what, NASCAR, get off of it and leave it alone." But anyhow, That's all right.
Well,
okay.
Like
I kind of agree with you a little bit. I'm coming in the middle.
Yeah, I mean,
I still feel a good burnout.
I'm not, you know,
I still feel that the impetus should be placed, that the owners have to put the impetus on it. That's where I think it has to come from. But, all right, anyhow, real quick, before I get off the Denny Hamlin winning. Yeah, that's my Philadelphia accent. Sorry, folks. Before I get off the Denny Hamlin winning Watkins Glen, I just thought I would bring up this funny here. I don't know if you saw this one or not, Sidekick, or read this one. Denny Hamlin this past week, you might remember Denny Hamlin has not won. He won at Watkins Glen, but he has not won this season since the very first race of the season, which was the Daytona 500. Denny Hamlin received his replica version of the Harley J. Earl trophy, which goes to drivers who win the Daytona 500. He received it this past week. And the silver plate on it read 2015 Daytona 500 winner. 2015 Daytona 500 winner. Now, obviously, it should have read 2016. Now, all right, on its own merit, one would think, well, okay, listen, all right, everybody makes mistakes, right? Yeah, but when you combine it with the fact that this past week, after Denny Hamlin won at Watkins Glen, Denny Hamlin tweeted out, it's been the best week as far as misprints go. Hamlin said in a tweet on Tuesday, referring to a headline he saw Monday after his victory at Watkins Glen, said the winner was Denny Hamilton. Broom, boom. Broom, boom. Yeah. Where's my drum? There we go. I don't know. Denny Hamlin might be a JGR driver, but I don't think he's getting much respect. I think that's the bottom line on that one. Not getting a heck of a lot of respect. I thought that was – I had to bring that one up. I thought that was kind of funny. Real quick, let's take a look at the standings, overall standings, as we head to Bristol, Sidekick. Brad Keselowski, of course, sitting up at the top, still not only with wins, but also in points. Kyle Busch, and he tied for wins. But Brad Keselowski still leads in points by about 50-plus points ahead of Kyle Busch. So Kyle Busch technically coming in second place. Carl Edwards in third with two wins. Now, you go all the way down and all the way down, and you get through to them all. Chris Buescher, what does Chris Buescher need in points? 300, is that right? Is that the number? Is that the magic number for Chris Buescher? What's the magic number for him? He needs to have in points plus a win? I think it's 300.
30th in points.
30th in points. Oh, okay. He's got to be 30th in points. Right now, he's 31st in points right now.
Yes.
Okay, so that's what it is. It's not the number of points. It's the position in points. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Right now, Chris Buescher has a win, but he is 31st in points. Now, with that qualifying position that he got tonight, that could go a long way for him at a short track like Bristol tomorrow. But we'll get into that. Now, drivers that are right now in without a win. Ryan Newman, 562 points. Chase Elliott, 561 points. Austin Dillon, 559 points. Jamie McMurray, 550 points. You know something, Sidekick? When you draw that line across number 14, you go to 15, talk to me. Is there really a bubble here? There may not be. Kyle Larson, 520. He's 30 points behind Jamie McMurray. Number 16, Trevor Bayne, 512. He is, what? That's 38 points behind Jamie McMurray. Casey Kane, 509. He's now 41 points behind Jamie McMurray. Is there a bubble in this? Is there really a bubble? Are there really any bubble drivers?
I don't. Yeah, in four races.
Exactly.
Those quote unquote bubbles need to get a win. They're not going to. I don't think you're going to get in on points.
You're not going to get in on points.
You know, Chris Buescher, he's 3 points.
Oh, he bollocked everything up, didn't he?
He's
he just
3 points.
He bollocked everything up, though. Think about it. Go ahead.
Well, not necessarily.
Well, he bollocked it up for the guys that are right now that we're looking at that are quote unquote bubble, but really aren't.
Yeah, but you know, you got Tony Stewart. Tony Stewart's sitting in 26th. And he's in the chase.
Well, because he's got to win.
And he's in top 30 in points.
Well, okay.
Same thing. Yeah, you know, it's the same deal with Chris Buescher. He's got to win. He's just got to get within the top 30.
But Tony Stewart missed how many races?
Well, true. But okay. But also, at the same time, let's be honest, how much higher do you think Tony Stewart was going to be?
I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't know he would get to the point he is right now. I mean, at one point in the season, I didn't know whether he would. I'm going to be honest with you. It wouldn't have surprised me in the least if we would be sitting here, you know, right now with four races remaining, and we would have been talking, you know, at this point about Tony Stewart being on the outside, way looking in.
Oh, sure. I totally thought it, and I'm a fan.
Exactly.
I love Smoke, and I, you know, I totally didn't think he was going to be in the chase this year. So, yeah, and lo and behold, here he is. He's in the chase. You know,
but
and,
it would
you
seem
know,
to me, it seems to me that Ryan Newman, Chase Elliott, Austin Dillon, Jamie McMurray, for all intent, I mean, and look, I'm not – we still got four races. I certainly do not want to close the book, and I'm not closing the book because, you know, Kyle Larson sits out there, and let me just pull up that. Wait, do I have it up here? I'm just wondering. I think I saw Kyle Larson's actually. Where did I see Kyle Larson's coming in the qualifying for tomorrow? Oh, okay, forget it. He's 23rd. But, I'm not closing the book on this, but it would seem to me that you are spot on. Those four guys right now that are in there on points are probably in there on points. Unless one of these others that I just mentioned that are below the line, you know, get a win. That's the only thing that's going to get them in.
Those four guys right now are sitting there hoping that there is no new winner and that Chris Buescher DNFs the next four races. Because Chris Buescher is 3 points behind David Ragan. He's only 3 points out of being in the chase.
I think
you know,
it's
we're
safe
talking
to
about
say. I think it's safe to say Chris Buescher based on the history at Bristol and based on his qualifying position for this week, I think it might be safe to say that Chris Buescher might be a solid 30 at the end of tomorrow night.
Yeah, because where did we say he qualified? Top 15?
12th.
Yep.
He's 12th.
So he's going to be towards the front of the pack.
Yep.
So he just needs to keep that car in, you know, in one piece and not, and basically, finish ahead of David Ragan. You know, and I'm sure David Reagan's sitting at the back of the field.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Let's see. Do I have I'm looking at the qualifying list. David Reagan is coming out of the 37th spot.
Yeah, so he, you know.
I love.
Chris Buescher just needs to run 4 good races.
I'm going to be honest with you.
Not DNF.
I was not thrilled when Chris Buescher won at Pocono. Not because it was Chris Buescher, but because of the way the win was gotten. Because frankly, as everybody knows, if you listened to the show from 2 weeks ago, I was not happy with the conduct of Pocono all the way around, period. But the more this goes on, the more I'm really liking Chris Buescher. I think it's fabulous. I think it is a fabulous, fabulous Cinderella story. Go ahead.
No, absolutely. That's why I'm on the Chris Buescher bandwagon. And, you know, here's, you know, we sit here and we talk about, you know, this new latest version of the chase. And we always sit here, you know, and we, you know, who's getting in, who's not getting in. And then come the cutoff, when we know who's in the chase, why is Ryan Newman, why is so-and-so, why is this person, they have no wins, why are they even in the playoff? And the first year we did it, Newman made it almost to the final round, almost to the final four. You know, and we're like, dude, is this guy going to actually win this without a win, except for Homestead? You know what I mean? But, yep. And we talk about it every season, and then the non-winners usually get eliminated early on. But this year now, if Chris Buescher does not make the top 30 in points, now we can talk about why are Ryan Newman and these 4 guys that don't have a win in the chase. You got Chris Buescher, who has a win. It was a rain shortened race, but, you know, nonetheless, it was a win. You know, it's not any different than any other win. You know, there's not an asterisk, you know. You know, why isn't this kid in? Winning, you know, wins matter. That's the new NASCAR, right?
Yep. I was just about to say to you.
You got a winner. And he's not even in the chase.
Yep. I was just about to say to you, I think you make an excellent point. You bring up the next controversy, in fact, if he does not get it. Because if I'm not mistaken, one of the reasons why NASCAR made the changes they did was to, in fact, reward winning. They wanted to get away from that thing that
winners.
You right. They got away. They wanted to get away from that thing that you talked about for years and years and years right here on this show, which was, quote unquote, consistency. But they wanted to get away from it, not because of consistency. They wanted to get away from, I think, Sidekick, what they viewed as complacent consistency. That is, run just well enough. Run like Jimmy Johnson. Get a top 5. Make sure you're getting in the top 10 consistently enough to get you enough points to make it into the chase. What I would call complacent consistency. So I will, you know, editorialize on your line from many, many years ago. So I think you bring up a very good point. If, in fact, Chris Buescher does not get into the chase for one reason or another, but a Ryan Newman, who consistently, there we go, back to the consistency thing, consistently seems to always be in the bubble, on the bubble, you're going to have the next controversy in NASCAR. There it is. Interesting how the words come back to haunt us, aren't they?
Yep.
But it's I'm going to be honest with you. I think I'm going to kind of be rooting for Chris Buescher. I might actually have to think about sneaking him on my team, perhaps maybe this week, because God knows I could use a win in fantasy just to lock myself in and make sure that I get there. I think I'm going to be all right. But we got just about 20 minutes or so left here in this program that I thought was going to be a bit shorter, but hey, for two guys, we make a lot of noise. Bristol, you know, I was kind of hoping that maybe we were going to be able to get Christian Coley on with us. You know, I reached out to him last night and I said, hey, Christian, hey, it's Friday. You're normally here with us. And, you know, for most of the week, he had indicated he was going to be here. I know he is down at Bristol tonight for Xfinity. I was kind of hoping we were going to be able to get him on because I wanted to chat with him about this alleged improvement, apparently, that they made at Bristol that we're going to see in this race tomorrow night that we did not even see in April. Bristol, since April, has put down a the bottom lane of the track. And mind you, you know, we know Bristol. It's tough to get two lanes running in Bristol anyhow, really, when it comes right down to it, except in the stretches, you know. The bottom lane at Bristol has been covered with a rubber kind of tacky surface. With the hope being that they're going to be able to get two-lane racing for a good portion of the track, that drivers will not be inclined to necessarily constantly ride the high lane and, as a result, get to follow the leader sort of thing. Jimmy Johnson has actually come out and said, oh, this is great. They ought to do this at more tracks. They ought to do this at mile and a half, too. I would have loved to have had Christian on tonight because, of course, Christian was there two nights ago for the Camping World truck race because, you know, he was the one who got us Bryce Napier, and he's down there tonight. And I was kind of hoping we were going to be able to get him on because I wanted to get his firsthand, you know, on-the-spot perspective of this quote-unquote improvement. What do you make of it, Sidekick?
Good question. I don't actually know right now. you know, it's going to get more passing. You know, I'm definitely a fan for it. But we'll have to see if it actually works out like they intend. I'm trying to think of what was the other track that they supposedly did an improvement to? Was it Martinsville? Where they tried to do an improvement and actually made the racing worse.
Oh,
They shaved part of the track down or did something.
Yeah, you got me.
I can't remember that was Martinsville or where. It was another one of the smaller tracks. But I want to say, like, they shaved down part of the surface so that it wasn't such a – so it wasn't as steep or something like that, and it actually made the racing worse.
The comparison here to what they've done at – and I'm trying to find the right article because I got a couple of articles up here. Okay, I got it here. The comparison – to what they've done here at Bristol, Jimmy Johnson pointed out, is not dissimilar to what Pocono Raceway did in 2008. And Psychic, you might recall this. I do remember this myself. To what Pocono Raceway did in 2008 before the track was repaved, in that situation, a 15-foot wide strip of new asphalt was inserted into turn three as a repair, but drivers quickly realized it had added grip. So they changed the racing line. And basically, that is what they're hoping for here at Bristol. Now, here's my concern about it. Here's my concern about it. And anybody that's been listening from the top of the program might recall that I just got done saying that Bristol is the track that has the most cautions of any track up to this point. You know, our good friend D.W. Darrell Waltrip always loves to go on about the Bristol Stomp. You know, the beating and the banging and the, that's what you're going to see. At the same time, I was a little bit surprised at Jimmy Johnson coming out and saying, oh, yeah, man, this is a great idea. Because hasn't it been, and I don't want to put Jimmy Johnson in as one of the older drivers. But look, let's get it straight. Jimmy Johnson is one of the veteran drivers. And we've heard from drivers like Junior. We've heard from drivers like Tony Stewart. And there's probably another one or two that are escaping my memory at this moment, who have this year alone come out and said, you know, what the hell's the matter with these drivers? They're just getting too damn aggressive. Well, I'm wondering, is this going to make aggressive driving at a place like Bristol, which is already aggressive enough, is this only going to increase the aggressive driving, which is only going to lead to more cautions, more delays, more fan frustration, because that's what you're going to be looking at. You're going to be looking at restarts. That's my observation on it.
Well,
that's still a tough, you don't know how the driver's going to react. You know what I mean? And part of the, I guess the allure of Bristol is, you know, it's short track racing. You know, like you said, DW, you know, the Bristol Stomp, you know, you're beating and banging, you know, there's really no aero at Bristol. You know, and you're cramming 40 cars on this little track. So, you know, passing is hard because the number of cars, people get angry, that's the word I'm looking for. You know, they get aggressive because they're tired of, you know, getting bumped into and everything else. So, you know, this new high grip thing, you know, may lead them to being more aggressive and, you know, trying to bump people up and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, I guess, you know, we'll probably see more cautions.
That's my suspicion. And see, I got to be honest with you. You know, this is why I'm more of a fan of the bigger tracks, the more wide open tracks. You know, I'm a big fan of the super speedways. You know, I know the drivers aren't, but I like them because it's fast, it's wide open, it's four wide, it's five wide. I mean, I love that. You go to Bristol, you know, so often as not, it's follow the leader, particularly through the turns. You know, I'll be curious to see whether, in fact, we're going to start seeing too wide tomorrow through the turns. I kind of doubt it. I don't even know if a low rubber or low tacky sort of substance is going to solve that problem through those turns. But this is why I'm not a big fan of Bristol, because it just constantly feels like it's a stop and start race. But I'm concerned that if, in fact, this is the quote-unquote improvement that has been made to this track, which Jimmy Johnson sits there and says, oh, yeah, let's get this on. Look, I could see it being applied, excuse me, to a mile and a half, particularly some mile and a half. I could see it being applied to a mile and a half a whole lot more applicably and easier than we might at Bristol. You know, that's just, I don't know. That's just my personal opinion. Now, hey, some people might like this. You know, I do find that I'm kind of in the minority, that people who are really, really aficionados of racing and have been for many, many years, oh, no, the short tracks are the way to go. This is great stuff. I come away from it. I go, that's where I am with it. But I don't know. I think it's great for a really interesting. It's going to be something I'm going to be. Let's put it this way. It's going to be something I'm going to be spying on a lot tomorrow night. So it's going to make for a much more interesting, at least for this particular race, from a novelty standpoint, viewing situation. It's going to be something that you can bet is going to be on the agenda for tomorrow night, or next week rather, for next week when we come back and we're doing the race stream program. I mean, I'm going to be coming back to this, whether in fact that really was an improvement or not. But
Right. Well, actually, you know, in this USA Today article that you sent over, there's a great paragraph.
Go ahead.
And that where, you know, where did it go? You know, quote, for one thing, it's nearly impossible to bump someone out of the way on the high side. After all, there was nowhere to go. If the low line is the place to be, perhaps the old bump and run or spin and run will return. That's not pure racing, which most fans think of as a side-by-side battle and clean passing. And that's what you're talking about.
Right.
You know, but Bristol isn't about purity and gentlemanly conduct, which is what track officials overlooked when they listened to the drivers and created a track with progressive banking. End quote. And I think that kind of sums up kind of your position. You like the bigger tracks where it's, you know, where it's racing, you know,
yeah.
You know, there's passing and, you know, side-by-side racing and things like that. Whereas Bristol kind of is like a hybrid between demolition derby and racing.
Right. And see, I want to see racing.
Yeah.
I want to see three wide. I want to see four wide. Now, you're not going to see that. I know you're not going to see that at Bristol. I understand that. Okay. And I'm okay if we can get two lanes. I'm okay with two lanes at Bristol. I'm okay with that if you can get it. But
right.
I'm concerned that in a small track like Bristol, that the end result is going to be that we're going to double the number of cautions, which Bristol already leads all of NASCAR in cautions. And that's what's going to concern me about it.
Right.
I'm
kind of a fan of this tight pack racing. You know, I like all of racing. You know what I mean? I love the super speedways. You know, they keep me on the edge of my seat and, you know, cursing, you know, when, you know, you lose your whole roster, you know, because of the big one. You know, I like the road races. I like the, you know, the intermediates, and I like the short track. I like seeing these guys kind of in close quarters, you know, kind of bumping each other out of the way, you know, and that, you know, and seeing them get a little, seeing them on the side throwing helmets as, you know, the guy that wrecked them drives by, you know.
We saw that ad nauseum this past week, the infamous, you know, I'm trying to remember how many years ago now it was. It's hard to imagine because it feels like it was just yesterday when Tony Stewart fired his helmet at Matt Kenseth.
Yeah.
It couldn't have been 5 years ago, could it? I mean, with as many times as I've seen it this week, it better not have been five years ago. Don't even tell me it was 5 years ago. And that's why they were playing it so often. But No, and I hear you,
maybe
and I got
four,
you on that.
Because we've only been on the air five, so.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you're right. It was probably four. No, and you're right about that. You know, each one brings its own dynamic and its own personality, and I got it. No problem. But, you know, do I have a personal preference? Yes, I do. I like a wide open race.
2012.
A wide open race. You know, 4 years ago. I want to see a wide open race. That's what I want to see. I want to see as many people involved in the competition as possible. All right. But, all right, there you go. So, anyhow, that's going to be one of the things you're going to see tomorrow night at Bristol. And as we pointed out, we've already kind of gone over the starting lineup, anyhow, the pole positions for tomorrow as well, at least through to the top 10. I've kind of pointed out that where was I going? I've kind of pointed out, well, I forget where I was going with that thought, but anyhow, we've got all that in place, and let's I wanted to ask you real quick because we're kind of running a little short on time here now. Fantasy projections for tomorrow. Do you have anything prepared, or did you want to just release those at, you know, at some
point
tomorrow?
I'll have to do those tomorrow. Because I haven't got a chance to think about my eat my dust pick.
Okay. All right. I was going to go there next.
Well, I'm going to pull one.
Well, you don't have to if you don't want to, because I'll tell you, I have an eat my dust pick from NASCAR John, and I do have one from loyal listener Liz. I do not have one from Brandon. I have not chosen one myself. I'll release NASCAR John's and Liz's. But if you would prefer, I'll just release all those at once, like we do, pre-race over on our Frat House Sports Facebook page. Get out there and like that, folks. Frat House Sports, leave spaces in between. Look for our little purple icon and give us a like. You can keep up with everything we do here. But I could release that there, and I could release it on our fantasy page as well. No, if you want to release a pick, I will be more than happy to jot it down here.
Yeah, I will. I'll give you a pick. Give me a couple seconds because I'm flipping. I'm looking. I really don't want to pick one of them Toyota guys.
Doesn't want to pick a JGR. I will say this, that currently the standings are this. And now this little contest of ours will go through the chase. So it's not over in 4 weeks. This will continue right through to the chase. But I will say this. The point spread now is starting to really widen out. Sidekick is leading all with 681 points. You do have a competitor right now in NASCAR John at 664. However, then it drops back to 3, 4, and 5, where there's another little competition going on there. I don't know if 3, 4, and 5 is ever going to be able to get up to 1 and 2. So we might have a little secondary little race going on here. Brandon sits in third at 606. I'm coming in at 585, and loyal listener Liz is coming in at 573. But there you go. Sidekick, you're leading all. It looks like about not quite 20 points. Looks like about 17 points ahead.
I think I'm gonna go with Kyle Busch.
All right.
He's up front. He's a five time winner. Logano's won the past two night races. But I'm not quite that I'm
not quite sure Joey's got it this weekend. Of course, watch him win. But, I think I'm going to go with Kyle Busch.
Give me a little interesting stat here. Think about this one for a moment. Now, mind you, Bristol runs twice a year. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 of the past races at Bristol have been won by either Matt Kenseth, Carl Edwards, or Joey Logano. That's 6. That's 3 years. In the past 3 years, one of the two races, either spring or summer, has either been won by Carl Edwards, Joey Logano, or Matt Kenseth.
Aha. And I was thinking about Edwards because Edwards dominated the spring race.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I'm wondering.
Like I said,
Yep.
With my Toyota hate, really, Kyle Busch is the only driver.
And Edwards is one of your fortunes.
Well, right. But, Kyle Busch is probably the only Gibbs driver I'll actually root for. So while, from a wanting to win perspective, I would probably lean towards Edwards. I'm going with Kyle because, that's my heart pick.
Got you. NASCAR John is going.
I'm gonna have to get in bed with a Toyota this week, so I'm gonna pick the one
I'll remember it. I'll remember it next week, and I'll bring it up. NASCAR John is going with Jimmy Johnson. You will wait on Brandon's pick. I have yet to make a pick myself. Loyal listener Liz is going with Matt Kenseth. You can catch everybody's picks tomorrow, as I pointed out, over on our Frat House Sports page. Frat House Sports, leave spaces in between. Look for our little purple icon and give us a like. All right, there you go. Well, I thought it was going to be a somewhat shortened race. It was going to be a shortened program this evening, but we went the full gamut of 90 minutes. There you go. Like I said, two guys just making too much noise. If you want to hear
NASCAR policy,
yeah, you got it. If you want to hear some more noise, I'll tell you what you want to do. You want to tune in tomorrow afternoon, albeit it'll be some relaxed noise. It'll just be me and a bunch of clips from this past week, including, I'll bring you a little bit of the interview with Bryce Napier, 17-year-old driver for the Camping World Trucks that we talked to on Tuesday night. So you'll get a chance to hear that here tomorrow afternoon, 2 p.m. Eastern time, for another relaxed Frat House Saturday. All right, there you go. Psychic, thanks very much. Appreciate you being here.
Many absolutely,
thanks to
sir.
Loyal listener Liz for tuning in, as always, and giving us her comments. And many thanks to all of you out there that have been listening in. All right. My voice is going all of a sudden. And, there you go. In the meantime, get out there. Enjoy all your sports and enjoy your racing tomorrow night. Catch you tomorrow afternoon.